going on, family? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Ascension Radio. This is Mateo, aka Jaguar Shaman, and I have a very special guest today. You know, I had promised you guys that I was going to be bringing in a guest for one of my kind of early 20th episodes, and I was able to come across an individual that I started following on Instagram, and a lot of his information was resonating very heavily kind of with the beliefs that I have and the beliefs that I know that a lot of the people who follow me might share. And so I want to definitely just give a big round of applause and a welcome for Kenzu Neku.
Yo, what's up? What's up, everybody out there? Shout out to Mateo, Jaguar Shaman, and Ascension Radio, and all the followers. I go by the name of Kenzu Keku. Kenzu Keku. Kenzu, for those that may have heard the name, Kenzu is an ancient Egyptian deity, or an ancient Meru Necher. It would be referred to as a Necher, which means a deity or a nature or an archetype. And Kenzu means to the traveler, the one who travels by feet. Kenzu itself is actually representation of the new moon, and how the new moon is completely blank, and then it just travels along until it gains some light. And it just continuously moves along into each zodiac until it gains light from these zodiac signs. In the mythology, the way they use the science to explain the friction and what is known as black body radiation in quantum mechanics, which we can dive into a little later, it's the gaining of the light to illuminate. But in the mythology, they basically said he would go and slaughter the demons and the rebellious gods from each zodiac sign, and then he would become full, and then he would shit it out, or which we equivalent to now as the waning of the moon. So that itself is not only a cosmology but a mythology within just astrology and astronomy. And Keku is the primordial darkness, or the chaos, the dark energy itself. And that is one of the eight primordial gods and goddesses of what's known as the Kemenu, which we'll definitely be diving into a little later on as well, I'm pretty sure. So yeah, Kenzu Keku was a name that channeled to me as I was coming into a certain state of consciousness where the spirit, not only just my spirit, but the spirits that I had been working with, I was asking how I could be of service. And they told me, you know, within teaching and the certain services I offer. And then that name came to me. It's part of a longer name, but that name is what fell. And that's what I go by. So Kenzu Keku.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. And again, I apologize in the beginning. I missaid the name. But, you know, it's very interesting how you know, all of these kind of ancient religions were so kind of based off of these gaining power through the ascension of the zodiac, per se, and how it was like seen as kind of almost a very, very big thing around how all these ancient civilizations kind of built their entire cultural and religious systems. You know, around these kind of these entities in the cosmos, you know?
Yeah. It's part of, and we'll definitely dive into this for sure, I'm pretty sure. It's part of the Merkaba. Okay. So a lot of people have the concept of the Merkaba, or the Merkaba being some type of vehicle of ascension. It is, to a certain extent, but it's a lot deeper than what most people understand. And I don't know if we should dive into that right now, or should we kind of hold off?
You know what? Listen, man, I think that, like I said, you're definitely, this isn't going to be the first time I'm going to bring you on this podcast. I think you have a lot of wisdom, you know, that you could definitely kind of explain and impart.
Yeah. We could. I definitely want to hold that one off until at least a little later on when I can explain some of the precursor, just in case.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So just to give kind of a little bit of a background of what you do, you know, you have these classes. So can you kind of dive in and explain to us what it is that you offer in these classes, what it is that your goal is with these classes, et cetera?
Yeah, definitely. So how the classes came about was just mainly off of Interactions. I would have different interactions with people through Instagram, Facebook. I need to get deeper into Twitter. I used to have a Twitter following, but I kind of died off of Twitter. So hopefully they don't think I'm dead for real. But I basically, people would ask me, you know, how is it that I'm doing what I'm doing, or where I get the mindset? And I'm a very, I'm a scholarly like type person.
Right.
So if you aren't telling me you're channeling something, then I'm going to need the resource. So, and that's what Spirit had told me, that that's what I have a lot of resources. You know, I have my book, my library is extensive. So
right.
I decided to start teaching people applicable ways and practical ways to apply the magic that we're so fantasized about. And what I offer four different classes. One of the classes, which is my initiation class, is called Pura et Imharu, which people probably have heard. The Pura et Imharu is the coming forth by day. I teach people basically how that's done. What the coming forth by day in ancient Egypt meant, or the ancient Egypt book, ancient Egyptian Book of the Dead, it was a way of basically removing or detaching the mind and the soul from the spirit and the shadow. Because the spirit and the shadow is basically an intermediate between the spirit and the soul. And the shadow basically is what makes you incarnate. So the shadow is your past lives. It's the, right. what we call that practice, you know, like ourselves, shamanism, what we call the Akash.
Mm-hmm.
So basically that's part of the shadow, and that's where your shadow resides. And so that it can forever be accessed. So in case you ever need to access, you know, you experienced prior to this incarnation, you can still access it. Now,
gotcha.
Where that actually lies and within the brain is the neuromelanin, or the substantia nigra, the gray matter, synaptic nerves specifically. These things were basically intermediates between the physical body and prior to to you actually coming into life. And if you have too many desires or attachments to something physical, or just human thought, you know, just human thought in general, just the fact that you know how you see a lot of people on the, especially new age people, and not taking a shot at you guys, I'm just speaking factual here. You know, putting up videos about eating vegan and what the cows are going through and calling it spiritual, going into, you know, doing yoga in nature and calling it spiritual, trying to save the babies, calling it spiritual, vaccines, calling it spiritual. All these things are just human thoughts. Because if you literally take the human out of the equation, none of that shit's happening. So therefore, there's nothing spiritual about it. It's just your human thoughts are so weighed down in the physical matter that the only thing you can even imagine to be spiritual is something benevolent in matter.
Right, right.
So that's where they...
in nature.
Mm-hmm. Right. They're getting it twisted, where they think that as long as it feels good or looks good within nature, then it's spiritual. But then
right.
But it's not. And that has nothing to do with it. Like,
no, because spirit pervades nature. Like spirit is a precursor to nature.
Exactly. Spirit is trying to end this shit. Humans are trying to save it. And that's what's keeping it in play. It ended in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
The human thought and the fear of it ending kept assimilation going.
Right.
So, and that's basically what the Pura et Imharu teaches. It teaches you how to remove yourself from the simulation, how to literally find your own truths, you know, and to avoid reincarnating. That's basically like, and I know this for a fact because I've had two family members rest up that have transitioned, and one of them literally just came to me like 2 days ago from the God realm. Like, this motherfucker was gold. Like, when I'm gold, he was pure gold. Like, his skin was golden, and he had on like a he had on something on his head, but whatever it was, I couldn't look at it. I could only look at the bottom of it. So it was like something that was like, I can't even describe what it was, to be honest. And we were in some type of alternate dimension in Egypt, and he just kept asking me. We would go to different hieroglyphs, and he would say, "Tay, what this mean?" Because my first name is Alante, and they call me Tay. So he'd say, "Tay, what this mean? Tay, what this mean? Tay, what this mean? Tay, what Tay, what this?" And that's all he kept saying. And like, it was before I could even like really formulate the thought to answer him, he already had the answer.
Right.
You know, and so I know that what I teach works, because there's two people that have transitioned that I have got confirmation with, aside from just spirits and entities that have transitioned that I didn't know. You know what
I mean?
Okay. So that's that with that class. The other class is how to speak to spirits, which is actually one of my simplest classes. I forgot to mention, the first class is $144. It's a 16-week class. It's usually about 4 hours. It matters about how many people are inside the class and the questions. It's all done through Skype, so it all can be done online. And for people that's like, $144? Like, do the math. 16 weeks, 4 hours. I'm barely getting paid like $3 an hour, if that.
Yeah.
So clearly I'm not doing this to make money off of people. This is all doing because the spirit told me that this is what I should run with. So that's the other one is speaking to spirits class. That one is very, very simple. It's like a 2-week class. Sometimes maybe 4, it depends upon the person and their availability. If we can do a 4-hour class each week, then it would be 2. If we have to split it into 2 hours each week, then it'll make out 4. That one's $100 flat. And same concept. It's just that I don't teach the editing stage. I expect you to already know it. You know, if you're asking to speak to spirits, I'm assuming you know some type of magic. You're not just gonna step fully into it,
right? It's not like an entry level. It's more of like a certain spin to it that you've developed with, and that you expect people that are experienced to be able to work with at least.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Teach them small little practices that where you might not even know you speak into a spirit. You know. And you'd be doing it. And so I teach people how to kind of catch those small nuances.
And it's funny that you mentioned that, because, you know, so I help a lot of people with shamanic journey, right? And one of the biggest things is, you know, they'll come to me after a session and they'll be like, "Oh, listen, so this is what I saw, but I didn't get much." And then I'm like, "Listen, like, are you really paying attention? Because from what you told me..."
Yeah, like that's one of the funniest things that I always get. I remember I was doing Akashic reading for somebody, and they came to me like 2 days later, and they said, "So this spirit came to me, and they gave me all this information. And do you know who this is?" And I said, and I was like, "You didn't ask them who they were." like that was the first thing you know asked. Like, that's like, if a person comes up to me in normal life and starts telling me a lot of information and it's fucking dope, I'm like, "Yo, who are you?" You know, that's like the first thing I ask them. I'm like, yeah, when the spirit introduces themselves to you, if they don't speak their name, you probably missed it. So you need to just ask them again, you know, because they usually introduce themselves some way prior. It just matters how aware you are within the dreaming state.
Right.
So that's pretty funny. Yeah. That happens to me all the time. I'm like, "So you didn't ask them work." And no,
I'm like, "Come on."
We don't hold it against you. It's just funny to us, because when you practice certain things, it's like it almost becomes like tying the shoe. You know, you don't tie the shoe then try to put the shoe on.
You know? Right, absolutely. And that's one of the challenges as well, I feel like, when it comes to kind of explaining those things. It's like, you do have to work through it. You know, I tell these people, like, you gotta do consistent work with it, so that once you start doing it, it's like, you don't have to remind yourself, because the more you remind yourself, you're removing yourself from that state of of kind of consciousness that really gives that deep connection, you know.
Sir, yes sir, that's very true. I was just having a short little session with someone from my class, class, which is the other class I was going to mention. I was talking about sigils, and I was just saying, like, she was just asking me about, like, how do I work with certain trees, tree of life, tree of death. And I was just saying, it's a lot easier to work with, to come up with a sigil that represents that energy than to work with the energy. Because as soon as you start looking at the tree and then saying, oh, shit, I'm in Yesod, now I got to go to Hod, you done already fucked up the whole vibe of it. Because now you're trying to logically, which is fine, tap into the subconscious again. And I was like, it's better to just check that sigil and just know by just looking at the sigil. Like, I can put an 11-pointed star down on a candle and know that's the clip off. Like, I don't need to have the names or nothing. I just know that's the clip off, and I can just go point by point, you know.
Exactly. At the end of the day, you always, after, you know, after that session, if you do need to kind of logically look at something, then you can do it at that point. But the point is to not that connection to the heart mind, which is connection right there that you got in the shamanism that I study. It's called the connection to the Nagua, right? And the Nagua only comes when you silence the mind. It's not there when the mind is on, you know.
Yep. So what they call that in Egypt is they call that Uub Ab, which means pure of heart, but it actually means your mind is pure, because Ab also means mind, like literally the mind. So which is also the heart.
Right, right.
So, well, really, I wouldn't even say it's the heart. It's more like the dweller within the heart.
Right, because it's not attached to anything, like, physically. It just manifests itself through that.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I teach in the Ma'a'a Sheta'a. Ma'a'a means to see. Sheta'a means mystery, but my mystery. So I see my mysteries. Because history is his story, and mystery is my story.
Interesting. That's awesome. And I like that.
So that came to me as I see my mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
What it is it literally teaches a person how to pretty much become a living God. And what I mean by that is it shows a certain practical and methodical method in manipulating dark energy and dark matter to create light. So literally pulling from multi-universes, different realities upon your desire and your will, and then making them fall into matter, which is what they explain. They explain that in ancient Egypt, how the universe was created. And then when I started to practice it and saw that it worked, then I realized we were really working with some energy here.
Interesting.
And that's pretty much that class, and then the first class, the Peret Ahimharu, to all in one. That class is 200, and that's 16 weeks as well. And then the last class is teaching how to read the hieroglyphs and speak the language. And then it's also the Sheta'a class. And that one's 300 for 20 weeks. And I do payment installments and all that stuff because I'm flexible. And then people have access to my library forever. And when I mean my library, I don't mean like, here you go, this is what I want to give you. I mean literally my entire library. So anything that I have read, you can read too. And that is what I believe a true a teacher or a true scholar is. A person that's not going to try to show you or make you believe what they know, but is going to give you the resource and let you have your own realization. Because there's been plenty of times in my class that people in my class have read shit that I had just like literally looked over. Like
right. You could learn. You know, you learn as you
and I learned from them. And that's why I always say we are always students in this experience. This is a journey, you know. And that's pretty much what I offer from a class standpoint. Aside from that, I do natal chart readings, sidereal natal chart. So I don't do tropical charts. I do sidereal. I do what's updated now. And we'll get back to that Merkabah, because that's very important on why that's the case. I do Godhead readings. So I can pretty much, from a numerology standpoint, break down the different deities and different energies that came in to your incarnation.
Right.
And then Akashic readings is pretty much my past life readings with the other two combined. The natal and the Godhead readings are $20 each. The Akashic reading is $40. And that those prices don't change. And then I offer herb packs as well that you can smoke, drink, or bathe in. And those are $20 each as well. Those are for your pineal gland, open up the pineal to cleanse the aura, to empower the aura. I have some that are for deities, so like for Kali, for Ra Ereketi, for Ishu, for certain deities, you know, Ganesha, things of that nature. And then I have those for, you know, prosperity, compassion, unconditional compassion for self, things of that nature.
Gotcha. So you pretty much have a pretty solid kind of offering that'll really supplement not just the studying, but really help people kind of build a lifestyle around these things, because that's really what you got to do, in my opinion, is, yeah. You know, you can't be a part-time believer in these things. This is something that you got to imbue into your everyday life as much as you can, almost to serve as a reminder of, you know, of that. And I say that, and I'm going to segue real quick, because what I want to do is kind of want you to explain a little bit about why the emphasis on the afterlife.
Okay.
And then I'm gonna give the emphasis from the shamanic studies that I've done.
Okay.
From what I've discovered, and then I want to see the parallels between that and you know, and kind of the comedic studies that you've done and what you believe.
Please.
So much, you know, the shamanism that I study is mostly kind of North American, South American, Central American, with some influences you know, of the shamans of Egypt, obviously, who were the predecessors of pretty much the majority of them, and then the ones in the West Indies, you know, as well as some from the Siberian area. But mostly, again, it's kind of centered around North, South, and Central America.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found is that a lot of these cultures, they didn't really put so much weight on the belief that you had, more so than the preparation to when your soul is going to leave this plane. You know, in other words, that was more important to them than kind of the belief system, because for them, it was about giving the soul a template to remember that it is not existence, that it is infinite and eternal, and that it must transition on. And that if it doesn't remember that, then it kind of comes back in and does, as you were speaking earlier, that reincarnation process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of these cultures believe that we had, for example, they speak about the fall, right? The fall of mankind.
Mm-hmm.
But these cultures, the fall of mankind was that there was this kind of predator that was released from the cosmos, from the darkness, the primordial darkness, that rejected source. And it basically found us. And since it saw that we had the potential to be, as you speak, you know, these God beings, it put us under a kind of matrix of fear and of getting stuck in this material world that allowed them to basically use us almost like sheep and cattle, and kind of drain our energy so that our souls were never really free from the reincarnation cycle. And, you know, these shamanistic cultures basically believe that you had to become a man of knowledge, in the sense of remembering constantly the state that you're in, so that when you were free and you were going to die, instead of facing death in fear, you embraced it as a portal into what they called the other side of infinity.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could maybe just kind of explain your take on it, some of the things that might have jumped out when I explained, you know, what I study and the practices that I do.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that is parallel, like almost identical. In Kemet, they definitely thought that the afterlife and understanding the transitional stage was the most important thing you could know. They literally did not care about you living. at all.
Right.
Like if you read, and this is why I always say that a person needs to understand the text, like actually know how to read the hieroglyphs to understand the language, because a lot of the stuff is hidden within the glyph. So right. Even I could say a word that sounds like exactly what you think it sounds like, but then it could mean something totally different if I change one glyph. Like literally, I could change one thing out of it and it means something totally different. So you have to, that's why a person would have to be able to read it to get the story. And if you read it, you'll notice that there's never any humans. And the only time they name humans in the Egyptian stories is when they're to be slaughtered off. Like, yeah. That's the only time that they ever mention humans, aside from how they were made. They explain how they were made, and then they say you slaughtered them off. That's it. As far as so, like when people say the Ankh means life, the Ankh actually does not mean life. If it meant life, then why is everybody that's carrying one dead?
True.
That wouldn't make any sense. You're like, everybody that you see with an Ankh in a pyramid is dead, so it would not mean life. What the Ankh was the actual tree itself.
Wow, okay.
So the top part of the Ankh is part of the Khemenu, so like we were talking about. So I'm going to break down the primordial darkness and all that stuff too, because I knew it would come back around.
Right.
Khemenu itself means eight. But the eight gods and goddesses were four gods and four goddesses. It was Amen, Erenf, which means he who hides his name. Amen, Erenes, which means she who hides her name. Then there was Nu and Nuet. Nu or Nun means nothing, which literally means the primordial waters or the primordial abyss. And Nuet was the primordial waters, which means... Mm-hmm. Which is talking about the womb and amniotic fluid.
Interesting. Wow.
Keku and Kekue is talking about sperm and Keku and Kekue is primordial darkness, which literally means the opening of the womb. So like how they explain the word Keku also means like a baby about to be born.
Right.
It literally means in the darkness of the night or when a baby is about to be born.
Okay.
Because it's mysterious. You don't know what the fuck's going on. You know what I'm saying? Right. So, and then they had AA. And AA meant everlastingness. But AA also means to break water. Which literally means the water breaking. So when a woman water breaking. So here's the key on that. The four things that they're talking about is the four amino acids that make an atomic nuclei. Sorry, that make the atom itself. And then the four fundamental interactions, which is electromagnetism, gravitational energy, weak interactions, and strong interactions. Those four things make an atomic nuclei. Which is what is needed to make a Big Bang. So that's right. Why I knew that they...
Creation, basically, is what's required for...
Yeah, exactly. Right, and so that's how I knew that they knew how to create the universe, because they basically explained how it was created off of just a deity story.
Right, right.
And the Khemenu is the circle at the top of the Ankh. And those are the primordial gods and goddesses that came forth. Now, here's the key on the Ankh shit. Amen is A. Nu is N. Keku is K. AA is H. Ankh. It's an acronym.
Right.
It's an acronym. And that's what I mean by you would literally have to know the language to get it, because everything is hidden within the language itself. So the top part of the Ankh is the from a Kabbalic standpoint, a Kabbalistic standpoint, it would be the Kether, Bina, and the Chokma, and the Daf. And then the cross that comes down is the rest of the Ankh.
Wow. That makes so much sense in terms of putting it in that perspective. And it's amazing, too, how, you know, they almost kind of had this all in a cipher.
Well, it was literally used to manipulate energy day by day. So that's how they were able to build pyramids. That's how that you would use the Klipothic energy at night to produce what your next day would look like.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you know what's funny? There's an entire, when you mentioned that, it's crazy the parallels, man, between these cultures, because the shamans of ancient Mexico, you know, they used to sit around in the silence of night, and they said that in the silence of night was when you could almost manifest,
yeah,
to use the New Age terminology,
uh-huh,
almost manifest what you would see the next day, and that the only way you could do that was by being clear of human distractions.
Yeah.
Almost understanding the shifts in energy so that you knew when it was time for you to sit and meditate and contemplate, and when it was time for you to act, and when it was time for you to rest.
Planetary hours.
Exactly.
Planetary hours. And those are ran by the Tree of Life.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, I didn't notice it until I started using them from an ancient Egyptian standpoint, because they always started at the 13th hour.
Right.
So
13th hour, that's crazy. The number 13 was huge in the Olmec and the Dzogchen calendar.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And the reason why is because a lot of people don't know that we have been on this planet as a culture, as a melanated culture, which is all across the board, wherever you find these ancient lands, for 6 million years. In America, 600 million years.
Mm-hmm.
In America, there were already people molding iron. I take that back. It was zinc. It was zinc. It's called the Dorchester pot. It was a candle holder. They thought it was a vase, but it's a candle holder. And basically, it has lotus leaves, hieroglyphs, all types of shit on there. And when they did the age on it, it's 600 million years old. It's made out of completely zinc with a silver inlay.
That's amazing, man. That's amazing.
1852 in Dorchester, Massachusetts. So that means that we had already been here forever.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, you know, it's funny because just before Thanksgiving, I put something on Twitter about how even in Columbus's journal, the Indians, they had explained to him how there had already been a race of melanated beings with golden spears that came in through ships in the sea, and they intermingled with the culture.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And even before that, obviously, the migration patterns all stemmed out from kind of like the West Indian, like North African, Central African areas. You know, these migrations that happened all kind of came from there.
And what had happened was, I believe, is this. I believe when they talk about the Tower of Babel, it was the breaking up of Pangaea and how shit happened, because that's why all the ancient cultures have pyramids.
Yep, absolutely. And it's funny because I forget which culture they had a pyramid where they had metals inscribed into the pyramid that could only be found off of the Nile.
Yeah.
I forget which it is. But I definitely want to look that up, because that's so interesting that you bring that up. It's always been something that resonates.
Even the stuff they found in Angkor Wat.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That stuff is because that was buried, you know. That stuff was like that. And one of the things that parallel when you were talking about before we were put in this matrix, what happened is how they explained it in the Gnostic text. And in the ancient Egypt was Horus and Set were twins originally. And what happened was Horus and Set basically always had this like an ongoing battle between themselves as Siamese twins.
Mm-hmm.
So like they literally just had one body with two heads. Now here's the fucked up part. Horus did some, I forgot exactly what happened. There's a couple ways that it is explained. One way is Set pulled his eyes out, and he crushed the genitals of Set. That's one way. But the other way is Horus was basically going to catch Set and his mom Isis Aset, which is Set's twin. See, that's what people don't catch. Set and Aset are twins, because originally Set was an Aset were married. And Nephthet was married too. Osiris was a woman at one point. So he was actually had nothing to do with Horus's story until like later on in the shit, like way later on.
That's why.
Yeah, like Horus and Osiris have nothing to do with each other in reality. Like that's it was Osiris and Ra, because Osiris was a woman and Ra was a dude. Ra was gay. Actually, he's bisexual. So, which we'll get into it a little bit too. It's because a lot of the story is hilarious. they were twins, and she let him go because she felt compassion for her brother. And when Horus got there, he went into a blind rage that she let him go, and he cut her head off. And out of his blind rage, he went blind. So he was taken out of heaven, and his head grew on the neck. They took his head from him and then placed his head on Set's body. That's how they became Siamese twins, and he was blind. So because he was always fighting Set, he ended up trying to enslave Set's people, which was the Dark Ones. You see what I'm saying? Because he was in the light, which from the Gnostic level, they explain that too, because they call Yaldabaoth the blind idiot god. And they said that he was ignorant in his darkness, so he enslaved his reflection.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In the Gnostic text, if you read the Threefold Thought or the Secret Book of John, they basically break it down as they literally say that he was ignorant in his darkness and he enslaved his reflection. So basically, he saw the melanated people, black, brown, all blue, green, purple at that time, because this is before we even fell into matter. So they were really green, purple, and blue, which is the colors of all these different deities. Amun-Ra's blue, Osiris is green, Kali's blue, Ganesha's purple, Shiva's
right.
So
all of these things could be seen, before. I remember seeing something on this about how before, obviously like the pillaging of Egypt and all of that happened, and the kind of like the fall of Kemet, all of these hieroglyphs were painted in those colors to depict these gods in those colors, correct?
Right, correct. They were painted in those colors because the reason why they did it, and this is, I'm glad you asked that question, because basically when we fell in the matter, we fell into matter as souls, eternal gods and goddesses. So we actually didn't even experience a birth. We just fell. So
it was the fall of quote unquote
the fall. We literally didn't even experience birth. We just like literally fell into being grown up as people with the mind state of a 13-year-old or a 14-year-old at the moment. So basically, once they died, once one of them died and it came back as a baby, they flipped the fuck out, because they realized that your mind did not retain the information if you did not have a way to use it. So that's why they started writing in the high. That's literally why they started writing in pyramids.
Because they wanted to try to remember. They wanted to try to keep knowledge so that we could remember.
Because through the hieroglyphs, because it's a pictograph, they knew the subconscious mind would remember the symbols. Because in normal conversation, first of all, they didn't speak really until they actually had to speak. Everything was telepathic. But prior to that, when they actually wrote, they actually wrote in cursive, like how we write cursive nowadays. That's Egyptian shit. Like that's literally how they wrote. It wasn't until they did magic or they went and did pyramid text or coffin text that they actually used hieroglyphs, because they knew that that was for your subconscious mind. The writing in the normal writing, the cursive, was for your conscious mind. So they didn't care to do that.
That's so interesting, man. That's crazy. And that explains a lot, to be honest. I've always had a fascination with ancient Kemet and particularly Egyptian, because I was only made aware of kind of the truth about Egypt and stuff like that, a couple of I want to say maybe like a year and a half, 2 years ago maybe. And I always did see, I told you I follow this guy called Kenzu, the Reminder on Twitter, and he always drops some gems where I feel like it resonates very heavily with what I know to be true. And when he drops those things, it pulled me in. And so when I saw that you kind of were studying the same thing, I wanted to get your perspective of things. Because like I said, I do feel like, you know, not because I don't want to go in and say that there is one way to be spiritual. Okay. Because I know that that's kind of offensive for people to hear. And I don't think that there is one way to be spiritual, but I think that your spirituality needs to have a certain backbone for it to be something useful and something practical.
Right.
Hinting at was that obsession with the afterlife, because what it sounds like from what we're both saying here is that this life doesn't necessarily matter as much so not as preparation with the next one, and to ensure that we remember so as to not reincarnate back into these karmic kind of bodies, this denser dimension.
And how that's done is through the human thought. So basically, the reason why the afterlife was so important, and I'll give you guys a clear concept, especially for those who have actually indulged. So I had DMT earlier, mind-blowing experience as always. The time you usually experience DMT is, and I'm not saying near-death experiences and all this other like random shit. I'm talking about factually everybody. Is when you're born and when you die.
Right. And it's a huge spike.
And it's a huge spike.
It's like a small, it's not just like a, because I heard sometimes when you're dreaming, you experience very, very low dosages of.
Yeah, yeah. If you have a strong lucid, you might get a little bit.
Right, right.
But you get a strong spike when you're born and when you die. And they explain that in Egypt, because they explain that the acacia tree was the actual children of the gods. Now, which is that in acacia as well as mimosa tenuflora is where you can make DMT from. But what it is that's to remind the soul that you're not really here.
Right.
Because if you have the DMT trip when you leave and when you come, it literally reminds the soul that this is a game.
Right.
And
originally that would have been enough.
Right.
You know, before the fall, that would have been enough.
Right. But what it is now is the human thoughts to have a higher concept, because we're constantly bombarded through our attention. That's why it's called paying attention. So basically, how it works is anytime your mind is focused on something outside of itself, then you're giving something outside of yourself power, no matter what you're doing. You're literally doing it. And the reason why is because it's called consumption. Either you're consuming or they're consuming. And sometimes, like in our case, with us sharing knowledge, it can be a counter consumption on multiple levels, because I'm consuming the knowledge you're sharing, you're consuming what I'm sharing, and then the listeners are consuming both. You see? So that's called the law of exchange. When the law of exchange is not in play, it's the law of vampirism, pretty much, where people are giving their energies into something. So just off of the simple fact that people believe in the higher self, like that term is banned in my class. Because basically,
and why, can you go a little bit into that and explain why?
The reason why is only because to say that there's a higher self basically means that the self you're at is already in a state of pretty much destitute or low or just low vibrations, and it's constantly working towards something that it can never reach.
Okay.
You see, because everybody's concept of higher self is trying to get to it. It's never right. I am my higher self, or I or the higher self has already been enlightened. Because first of all, if you were the higher self, then what's the point of saying the higher self?
Right, right. And I think, and I get you 100%. And I think I just want to tune in real quick, because I do use that concept myself, and I know people that use it. And I think when I speak of the higher self, it's almost like a reminder of the self that you're supposed to be, because you're stuck in these lower vibrations. And so almost calling onto that higher self might be like saying like, hey, remind you, like, it's almost like a reminder to yourself, like, hey, you know, we're here, we're present. But when it is used like that, when you're saying, oh, I'm calling on my higher self, I can 100% see how you're almost cursing yourself to these lower dimensions and this lower vibration. You're assuming that you're not that already, which you are.
Right, exactly. And that's why what I always say is I say the inner self.
The inner self, yes.
The inner self and the knower. You know, the knower is what I would refer to as my higher self.
Right, right. And then the essence self is what you are. It's like what you exist as.
Mm-hmm. And the inner self is more like that which is in the underworld, because the underworld and the inner world is the same, and the outer world or the higher world is all that which is projected, as far as how I look at it, you know, because I look at it from just a state of, I personally look at it, the reason I say that is because one of the practices I teach in my class is how to use the trees, the tree of life and the tree of knowledge and good and evil, from a Kabbalistic and Kabbalistic standpoint, how to use these things to manipulate things.
Understood.
And so that's why I always like to say, I don't like to say higher, because the average person, they don't think of it the way we think of it. You know, they think higher self is literally what these terminology, like if I were to Google higher, first of all, if I go on YouTube and follow the higher self channel, that's like literally everything.
No, bro.
And nothing against them, because everybody has their own path and everybody has their own, you know, process.
Yeah.
But
you know, it is a shame, because you do see in history these terms that have been twisted and turned. And so it is important that we kind of, you know, really dig in and find the true meaning of these things and know how to use them, because etymology is very important. You know, I think this whole episode, my listeners are going to see how important etymology has been in a lot of the things that you've been explaining, in terms of how it might be taken to people outside who don't know too much about this, and how it can be twisted.
Yeah.
You know, especially how it has been twisted and turned to almost a slavery system for your soul.
Yeah.
Literally, you know, in a lot of these new age religions.
Literally, one of the slavery systems that it is monotheism. In a one deity system literally creates the opposite. And that's what I teach in my class, is that as long as you look for unity in the world, you're always going to be disappointed. The only unity you should be looking at is how you can unify situations.
And that's another reason why a lot of laws, you know, like the laws, the hermetic laws, are very dangerous.
Right.
When they're applied willy-nilly, because they're coming from concepts that were a lot more ancient than these laws are, one.
Right.
And two, they're misinterpreted, because the initial knowledge with which they were based upon was misinterpreted.
You had to have a foundation. You had to read a Divine Pymander. You had to have the whole Corpus Hermetica under wrap before you even got into the Kabbalion, because we understood that just the first law itself will fuck a person up. The all is mind, the universe is mental. That basically said, do whatever you want, is do thou wilt. You know, like that's what homeboy say, do what thou wilt. That's what
yes.
that means. You know what I'm saying? The all is mind, the universe is mental. Do what thou wilt. That's the same concept. Yeah. Because
I talk a lot of crap about the law of attraction too. I'm like, you can't use that law without understanding one, all of the other ones, and two, the basis of it.
You can't, because what you're gonna, because, and this is again goes back to the higher self thing. If you say that you want something, the subconscious mind only understands that you don't have it.
Lack.
Continuously give you what you don't have. So if it's like, I want a girlfriend, it's basically gonna say, oh, I'm in a lack of a girlfriend. And every time I say I want a girlfriend, it's just gonna remind the subconscious, you're in lack of a girlfriend. So one's not going to come, because that's not how you manifest. So
exactly.
Attraction, you can't say, oh, I'm attracting a Bentley. Like, no, nigga, you're actually attracting
a Bentley. No.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's my beef with it. Like, you know, a lot of people think that I say that it doesn't work, and I work with it all the time. But when I work with it, it's different. Like, I'm calling upon energies that embody this, and that I embody through that. And that's how I work with it. I don't work with it as if that I'm requesting or that I am a Bentley. What I'm doing is I'm embodying what it would require for that to be in existence.
Yeah, exactly. Like you got it. Like I was saying that in class a couple of days ago. I was my homegirl. I was like, how would you use the vibration of prosperity to invoke it? And she was like, she said it, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna give you one. I'm the vibration of prosperity. And they're like, hi, I'm the vibration of prosperity. Just in case you didn't know, I'm the vibration of prosperity. You know how I became the vibration of prosperity? Because, shit, I'm the vibration of prosperity. Man, I'm the vibration of prosperity. I'm so much the vibration of prosperity. If I wasn't the vibration of prosperity, I would still be the vibration of prosperity. That motherfucker, I'm the vibration of prosperity. That itself is bringing out that energy a lot more than just saying, on the vibration.
Yeah, I mean, my brother, it's an invocation. You know, it's an invocation at the end of the day. You know, when you want to, for example, so I invoke a lot the spirit of the jaguar, because to the shamans of, you know, North, Central, and South America, the jaguar was basically like the apex predator.
Uh-huh.
And so he has a lot of qualities of, like, you know, mysticism and stuff like that. So I invoke that a lot. When I do so, I don't call upon the jaguar spirit. I am the jaguar spirit.
Exactly.
You know? I embody that. I go on journeys as if I'm following the jaguar around. I am the jaguar in the jungle, right, finding these things for myself.
Exactly.
You know?
Mm-hmm. And that's how the ancients did it. That's why a lot of the ancient Egyptian energy was like that. And that's how things got purported and changed, because you had priesthoods come in to play. So originally, pyramid tech started, pretty much everybody was just doing it as needed.
Right.
So when I needed to do some magic, I did some magic. Oh, we got to build a pyramid. All right, cool. I'm going to hold the capstone. You can just do this, dude. Like, it was just so nonchalant, it didn't actually even matter. Like, we
magic was everywhere. Magic wasn't in a temple. Magic wasn't in a church. Magic was everywhere around you. And that's...
And then when the priesthoods came into play, and everybody, because basically what happened was we had entities which were albinos, or either albinos, or they just technically were cavemen. I like to say they were cavemen, because then it gives some credibility to the European. As far as, like, existence goes, because the way they explain it, they literally explain it, and this is no offense to any Caucasians, but the Egyptians basically explained that they created Caucasians in a test tube as an experiment, and it went wrong. Like, they basically explained that they took Asian DNA and melanated DNA and put it into a test tube through, like, stem cell research. And it created some, and they called,
right. I have heard something along those lines.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not discounting them, because scientifically we know that the Europeans only existed about 8,000 years ago. They didn't exist prior. So
right,
that kind of does have a little resonance. So basically they said that after that time, they had to move. So they started to move around, and the priesthoods would stay with whoever didn't leave. So they started to become like almost like the holders or the gatekeepers of the information. And then once money came into play and wars and all that stuff, it eventually got changed into, oh, this is the Osirian priesthood, and this is the Sethian priesthood, and this is the Ptah priesthood, right, and this is the Horus priesthood, and this is the Sumer priesthood, and, like, pretty much all everything.
That whole split.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. And that's not to say that, you know, that somebody, let's say, that's Caucasian today can't still embody these things and these principles.
Right.
You know, it's just coming from a historic standpoint of what happened, of what came to be.
Right.
You know, they talk about split of the tribes with the you know, albinos having to go up to the mountains of Caucasus and living as cavemen, you know?
Right.
It's just history. It has nothing to do with good or bad. It's just more like, it's good to know.
Yeah, exactly. Because it comes into play today still, just off of the simple fact that, you know, a lot of Caucasian people with blue eyes get macular disease. macular degeneration in their eyes. The reason why is because that's the blue colored blonde hair does not absorb light. White skin does not absorb light. It reflects.
Right.
So these things need to be taken into account, because if you're out here just ignorant of it, you're pretty much putting your life in danger, you know.
Exactly.
Because ultimately, if you're thinking you're going to just be out here sun gazing because you see everybody else sun gazing, you're going to go blind eventually, because your eyes don't absorb the light. It reflects.
Exactly.
You have to.
There's other methods you could work with those energies. Right. You just got to be aware of
it. But it's just all day, every day. You know, you can do it when the sun is setting and when the sun is rising. Those are perfect. And then once your eyes get used to it, you can start to adjust. That's all it. That's all it comes down to. It's just steps to it. And then us, it's natural within us. But the problem is, we're so ignorant of what is within us, we've lost the power in the system itself. So
to tap in, right?
Yeah, to tap in. So it's literally both sides of the field are in the same ball game. You know what I mean? One's ignorant of what is in danger to it. And the other is ignorant of what's in danger and what empowers it, just like the other one's in danger of what empowers it. We're both in ignorant because they have taken the systems and they're using it against the masses at this point. It's not even a color thing. They're using it against the masses.
They want us to believe it's a color thing, but it's for everybody.
Right, exactly. And they're using it against the masses. And that's what that's what the Egyptians were really explaining when they said it. They were saying that what they created wasn't human like them. It was something that was basically animalistic and always warlike.
Right. And like I said, you know, it's not the first time that I've heard this mentioned. You know, even if you look at kind of the colonialistic standpoint in terms of the colonists coming into native territory, you know, they call the native savages, they call them warlike, but at the end of the day, they did nothing but welcome these people in. It was the colonial, you know, the colonists that came in and really waged war, whether you want to call it a war of attrition, a war of biological warfare or anything, but they were well aware of what was going on, and they knew why they were here. They wanted to take the land.
Yeah, even in, you're 100% right. Even in Greek, look at the Greeks.
Right.
They were taught everything by Egypt and still went over there to dominate. And then even when it comes down to savage-like shit, the only way you could even get into the army in Greece was by being fucked by somebody else. You have to basically be raped by another man.
Exactly. Which is, if you think about it, an act in and of itself of stripping people of soul.
Right. Exactly.
So it's like they knew that they had to create these empty vessels in order to enact this. And again, I do, because you know, I do have a lot of people, you know, of European descent who follow me, and so I do want to clarify that what we're speaking on here is not in any way an attack, to your ancestors or anything. It's just reality.
Yeah,
it's just the reality of the way history played out and why the things are how they are. You know,
at the end of the day, it to me, and this is why I have people that are of European descent in my classes, because of the simple fact they know that what I'm speaking about, everything I speak about, is how to free your ass from coming back here.
That's it. Exactly.
I don't care if you goddamn orange. Hopefully you're not Donald Trump, but I don't care if you're orange or you can be goddamn a Skittle color. You can be all colors. I fucking care. As long as you are in search of light and to know thyself and to find your own truth, that's the only thing I'm here for.
And that's all that matters. Yo.
Yeah, because and when it comes down to it, we all have a lot of karmic ancestral damage in our DNA from being slaves to being
from being subject to this to the system.
Yeah, to being slave owners. Both sides of the field got a lot of karmic issues that they got to clear. That's why we're all here at this time in the melting pot. And around the world where we can just have access to each other and see how everybody's living. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And you would think that it would unify But you know, the system doesn't want that. We were just speaking on that, how the system wants us to worry about skin color and wants us to worry about these very humane things, because they know that as long as we're worried on the humane, we're not worried about what's going to happen to our soul when we're done here.
Exactly.
We're not worried about, you know, understanding the light body that we embody and returning back to infinity, or you know, the like, as we were saying, the primordial waters, etc.
Right.
So listen, Kenzu Keku, I can sit here and chat with you all night, my brother, but I think we've hit the audience with a lot. I definitely want to give them a little bit of time to sit here, maybe hear the episode a couple of times and get everything, because you hit us with a lot of stuff, man. And I'm super grateful that I was able to bring you on. Like I said, we're definitely going to get another episode going. I mean, we can get one in this week, later this week, maybe Thursday or Friday, if you're available. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd definitely be down for that.
Definitely.
But like I said, you know, you definitely hit us with a lot. So I want to give the audience kind of a chance to, you know, listen through the episode, get any questions, any feedback. And then what we can do is we can come back, and if they have any questions specifically at this point, now that they know what you do and stuff like that, you know, we can hit it with a more organized Q&A maybe at the beginning, and then go into our, you know, our rant, because I'm really enjoying this back and forth for real, man.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That sounds good with me, because, I mean, like you said, we could talk all night, because a lot of the stuff, like you were saying, a lot of stuff you were saying is resonating with stuff I'm saying, and I know likewise.
It's parallel, man. It's parallel.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, Kenzu Keku, if you could do me a favor, just give them a shout out. Let them know what your Instagram is. If you do have that Twitter, or if you want, what I can do is I could just kind of send that Twitter out once you reactivate it, if you haven't deactivated it. So just let them know your tags real quick.
Gotcha. Yo, everybody out there at Ascension Radio, I appreciate y'all having me. Mateo, the Jaguar Shaman, I appreciate it. I go by Kenzu Keku. You can find me on Instagram, XNSW. KKW. Actually, I think it's XNSW_KKW. XNSW_KKW. That's Instagram. You can find me on YouTube under that name as SW space KKW. It'll pop up. I have my videos on there. I'm going to reactivate my Twitter. It will be the same as my Instagram, which is XNSW_KKW. You can find all my information there. You can DM me if you want to, you know, sign up for classes or any of the services I offer. And aside from that, like Mateo said, I'll definitely be back up on here.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for, you know, your time. Thank you for the knowledge, man. I think a lot of the people that follow me that kind of have studied a little bit of the Kybalion and the Kabbalistic methods are definitely going to resonate with some of the stuff you said. I think some of the people that follow me from my shamanism are going to see that, you know, shamanism and these kind of beliefs have been around for a while.
Yeah.
This isn't something that is just kind of made up out of thin air. This is something that has been, you know, a template almost created by our people for the soul in order to remember why we're really here.
Yes.
And I think that's deep. You know, I think that's one of the most beautiful things we could take from the entire episode is that, you know, through everything that they've tried to put us through, there's still some of us still having that knowledge and still trying to, you know, get it out to as many people as possible, you know, not as teachers or gurus, but more as, you know, listen, you know, we came from this and we got to remember that this is what where we're going to end up,
yeah.
You know?
I call it being divine reflections. You know what I'm saying? If we're on the same vibration and I resonate with what you say, we working on the same frequency, we're just reflections of each other on the same vibration, you know?
I respect that, my brother. Thank you so much again for coming in. Guys, thank you for tuning in. This was episode 20 of Ascension Radio. Like I said, I'm going to have some more people coming in. Kenzu Keku's definitely going to be a regular on the show. If anybody has any questions or anything like that, you can hit me up at the Jaguar Shaman. Shoot me a DM through Twitter or on Instagram at Ascension Radio. If you just DM me with any questions about this episode, you know, me and Kenzu Keku will definitely sit down and kind of, you know, hash it out together. Big shout outs to everybody who's been supporting the podcast. I know some of you guys had subscribed. You know, you didn't need to, but I really appreciate it. Much love, family. We'll be connected soon. Thank you. Ashe.